Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Oh, got it! Got it! Got it! 33!
Center field, Marsh leaps, and he got it!
It normally.
High fly ball, deep left field. Oh, 27 does it again
for this year.
Wall sends it well out to left center field, and it's gone. He went to Jared.
Way
diving catch, Jordan Dell.
This is Brandon Marsh, the Los Angeles Angels baseball. You listen to All Angels Podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of the All Angels Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Garcia. So some tough times right now for the Angels and the Angel fandom for sure. Obviously, this stretch of games surrounded by the injuries and just the inconsistent play of the Angels seems to all be meshing at one time, obviously. Talking about the schedule, talking about the trip to, well, even before they went to New York, playing Toronto Blue Jays at home, then New York, then Philadelphia, and now finishing off this long stretch against the Dodgers. And a Dodger team that had been struggling coming into Tuesday's game, I believe losing 3 games in a row to San Francisco. And I did a Instagram Live right before the series. I think it was on a Monday because of the off day. And someone on there, and I forgot who exactly it was, mentioned that the Dodgers would be coming in mad. And, you know, I think like the Angels, the Dodgers were just trying to find something to get their team going. So it was two teams at very different parts of the season because even though both teams were sliding, the Dodgers had a pretty good lead, if not on the division, but on a playoff spot, where the Angels at this point we're really hanging on to be even in contention for that last playoff spot. And, you know, hopefully fans were hoping that there would have been a little bit momentum build after the strong, really strong performance on Saturday against a really good New York Mets. But it just did not seem to come. Or stick around, I should say. It came on Saturday, but it did not stick around on Sunday. Obviously, Monday off day. Tuesday, opening day of the Freeway Series at Dodger Stadium, where Noah Syndergaard would take the mound for the Angels. And for the Dodgers, you would have Tony Gosselin on the mound for, again, the Dodgers. And some people coming into this series were kind of like, all right, cool, they're going to miss Urias, or they're going to miss Kershaw, and Walker Buehler's now hurt, and they kind of felt like, okay, the Angels missed the meat of that rotation. And if you look at some of the numbers for this year and not focus so much on the names around the team, Tony Gosselin is probably their most consistent pitcher this year, having an absolute Cy Young type of year. And this game turned into a pitching duel really quickly, because it was scoreless all the way until the bottom of the fourth, where Noah Syndergaard got into some trouble with his command. He looked really good early in the game, but like I mentioned, in the fourth inning, the command started waning a little bit, walking Freddie Freeman, then giving up a single to Trey Turner. Again, walks being the key thing for him. He ended up walking 3 guys in that inning and giving up 1 base hit that would allow 1 run. But other than that, Noah Syndergaard did not look bad. The tough part for him is that inning, the fourth inning. I think they showed a pitch count of the first couple innings. And the first two innings, I think both innings were under 10 pitches or right around that 10-pitch mark, which is perfect for any pitcher, especially a starting pitcher, to do in an inning. But in that fourth inning, because of the command issues, he got up to, I believe, 40 pitches in one inning. And that is definitely something you don't want to see from a pitcher, regardless of if it's a Noah Syndergaard type or even like a Verlander or anything like that. But definitely was, he had some struggles. But again, he limited the damage, which was the bright side, giving up a hit, walk three. One of those walks ended up leading to the run, but he got out of it. And to the credit of Phil Nevin, and I think some people were critical about when he did take Noah Syndergaard out, but to the credit of Phil Nevin, if this was Joe Maddon, I don't even think Noah Syndergaard comes out for that fifth inning. I think at a certain point, Joe says, "You're great, you got out of it, but you had 40 pitches in that inning. We're going to go ahead and sit you down." But Nevin let him go out, which I think is part of the confidence building that this team desperately needs. At least the attempt at building confidence. I don't necessarily know if it's working, but I feel like they're at least trying, and it's up to the kind of the individual player at this point to either take it or not. But Noah Syndergaard did come out in the fifth, but did give up a leadoff double, but ended up getting the next two outs. But because Freddie Freeman was next to bat, Nevin did feel like it was best to go to the bullpen. So that would conclude Noah Syndergaard's night, going 4 2/3 innings, only giving up 2 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. So again, not a terrible outing, but you have to take into consideration that one inning was 40 pitches long, and he left with an 82 pitch count, not even through a full 5 innings. And some people will say, well, it was only 82 pitches. And I'll say this, and this is exactly what happened on Wednesday too with Reed Detmers. 82, 83, 84 pitches doesn't have a blanket statement. Doesn't mean that, you know, that's the only thing you can look at. You can look at the innings pitch and you can really tell, and especially with Noah Syndergaard with all the walks and a difficult time getting out of that inning, those were high leverage, high stress pitches. So not all 82 game or 82 pitch games are the same. If it was 82 pitches in the seventh inning, then yeah, I say why take him out, let him keep on going. But it was in the fifth inning. You know, you are at this point still in the game. It's a one run game. You're still in it, and you have a great matchup coming up with Quijada coming in to face Freddie Freeman. So I understand why he took out Noah Syndergaard at that point. And again, if that was Maddon, I have a really strong feeling that he doesn't even come out for that fifth inning. But not all pitches are built the same. He had 82 pitches, 82 very, very, very high-stressed innings or high-stress pitches. And with that 40-pitch count in one inning, you kind of knew that the end was getting close regardless of what he kind of did after that. And that's exactly what happened with Noah only going 4 2/3. Quijada would come in and he would pitch the rest of that inning plus one more, had a very, very good outing, was zeros across the board with one strikeout. So this game was in hand or close, not in hand, but in close for the whole game. And the Angel fans are just waiting and like almost starving for any kind of offensive output from any of the guys at all. But like I mentioned before, Tony Gosselin has been an absolute stud for the Dodgers. At the end of this game, his season totals are now 12 games started, 8 wins, a 1.42 ERA with a 0.82 whip. This guy has been the Cy Young of the NL, or at least one of the top Cy Young pitchers in the NL this year. And the Angels absolutely got you coming in struggling as it is. And then you absolutely come into a buzzsaw like Gosselin. It just did not help this team at all. Gosselin would end up going 6 1/3 innings too. But like I mentioned, the Angels had a really, really hard time getting any offensive going. And with Ward back in the lineup for this game, you can understand the kind of anticipation, hope, of this offense getting something going. But again, that's just not necessarily, that's not what happened at all. And you can blame, you know, the day off, you can blame the hitting coaches, but I don't know at what point does the players themselves take accountability for this. Ward ended up going 0-for-4 in his game, his first game back from the IL. That was kind of not surprising, with the fact, though, how much of the timing was might have been lost, or how much of the how much he probably didn't swing a bat at that time. So 0-for-4 in his first time back against a really good pitcher was not surprising. But then you keep on looking down the lineup sheet. Trout with a single hit, Ohtani with two hits. Ohtani slowly starting to heat up, maybe not power wise, but he's definitely getting his average and getting on base more and more. But he ended up getting two hits for this game. But after that, you had zeros across the board, from the all the way down from Rendon, who got taken out, and we'll talk a little bit about that injury later. But Rendon 0-4, you got Walsh, that's 0-4, you got Stassi, that's 0-4, Marsh, Velasquez, Wade, Renjifo, all these guys at least had one at bat and all had zero. So you don't necessarily know what it is, because even your top guys have been struggling. It feels like Trout has not been the same. Yes, he had that great two home run game on Saturday against the Mets, but you take that one game out, Trout has been really struggling and has not been the MVP type of player the Angels need to be competitive. Let's be honest. Like, Trout needs to be an MVP type of player. And if you look at the probably the last, you know, 3 weeks, especially during that losing streak, he was not that. And that's just really going to hurt this team's offensive production. Yes, Ward is back, and I feel like that will click. That will come around with him there and Ohtani and Trout. But, you know, the first game back, I was not surprised. And even late in the game, even after Andrew Wants gives up a home run to Mookie Betts in the eighth inning to make it 2-0, the Angels still had a very, very good chance to at least tie the game, and put some pressure on Craig Kimbrel, the closer for the Dodgers. Because in the ninth inning, Mike Trout would come up and get his one hit of the game in a very scary and odd moment in the game, where Trout breaks his bat on the hit, and on the follow through, the bat ricochets backwards and nails the home plate umpire right between the mask, right between the eye slits in his mask, to where you can tell it scratched him up pretty good, and he had to be removed from the game. So with that, Kimbrel kind of sat around and had to wait for, you know, the umpire to come back out. Did that have anything to do with the with him struggling right after that? I don't know. But once play did resume, you had Shohei Ohtani again slowly hitting up. I think he has like a 6 or 7 game hit streak going on right now. But he would come in and double. So now you're looking at second and third. Duffy comes in, walks. Duffy again in for Anthony Rendon. But after that, so you have bases loaded with two outs with Jared Walsh on the mound. And you would think, Kimbrel being a righty, Walsh being a lefty, Walsh hitting righties very well, you would like the advantage there. But that is not what happened after Walsh strikes out to make the second out. Max Stassi comes up again with another opportunity to get a base hit, scores two, ties the game. You take your chances in the extra innings, or, you know, maybe he gets something down the line and all those guys come home with a base clearing double of some sort. So unfortunately, Stassi, watching the game live, you can very easily see how they wanted to pitch Stassi. Everything was away. Everything was kind of up and away. There was some calls that were on the borderline where, yes, it could have went either way, strike or ball. But you saw with the new umpire back there, he was giving that zone a strike call. And Kimbrel just kept on peppering that zone. And I was very, very surprised that Stassi did not seem to adjust to that at all. Not even, you know, if you take a hack at it and you miss, that's one thing, especially that late. You're not worried about hitting a double play. You're not worried about, you know, a soft line ball, a soft line drive or anything like that. You're just trying to put the ball in play with two outs and bases loaded. And for him to not swing at all was very surprising, especially for me, someone that has never played, you know, baseball at any kind of real big competitive level, to see like, oh, this pitcher is trying to work him away. And for Stassi not to realize that. I don't know if the scouting report on Stassi is that they never pitch him away, so he was just waiting for him to come back in. I don't know, but it was very, very surprising to see Stassi not at least attempt to fight off a pitch and foul it off when it was consistently on the outside half of the zone. And yeah, some of them were questionable, but with two outs and the bases loaded, you need to at least foul it off and compete. And he did not do that. So the Angels would end up dropping the first game of the freeway series 2-0. So now let's talk about Anthony Rendon. Anthony Rendon has came back during the weekend series against the Mets. And it was something to really look forward to because, like I mentioned in the past, you can have your thoughts about Anthony Rendon as far as if he is a benefit to the team, if he's a detriment to the team, if he costs too much, if he does, you know, he's not worth the money or any of that stuff. And I can totally understand everyone's viewpoint on that. But I think the one thing that is not refutable, not arguable, is he is a better third baseman than what the Angels have right now in his backup being Matt Duffy. I still think, you know, a 60% Rendon is probably better than 100% Duffy if we take over the whole picture of the player, not just the offense or not just the defense, but the whole picture, the whole vibe of the player. But obviously he got hurt. Reports came out after the game, or actually during the game, that it is a re-aggravation of that right wrist, the same wrist that put him on the IL earlier this year. And for me, it kind of started sounding like it later. Did the Angels rush him back too soon? A losing streak and losing a lot of places in the standings will do a lot of crazy things for front offices, people's minds, and managers' minds. You start being a little more desperate. It already came out that, you know, obviously Joe Maddon's gone, but now Perry's now the next guy on that chopping block. He needs to start performing too. And maybe this team will start performing in the future. Maybe Perry has done a great job with the draft class that he had last year and some of the guys that he picked up last year in the minor leagues that have, you look at some of the minor league teams around the Angels and they are competing and they're competing very well. So for some of us Angel fans, that is something that I guess it's something to look forward to. But when you're in the here and now, as far as how's the major league team doing, it is hard to kind of get amped for the minor leaguers that are still 2 or 3 years away. But again, going back to the whole Rendon thing, did they rush him back too soon from this wrist injury? It is starting to seem like it. So we'll have to kind of wait and see, because right now he's considered day-to-day. I'm recording this Wednesday night after the Angels and Dodgers game. And as of right now, he is still considered day-to-day, not on the IL. By the time I post this, by the time maybe you listen to this on Thursday, that could change. And he's now on the IL. And, you know, you'll have to see what happens going forward now with Anthony Rendon. Just because, like I mentioned before, he is a guy that has struggled. No doubt about that. But I still think it is a better option than what they have right now. And like the one thing about, and just thinking about this, and this is kind of a stream of conscious kind of thing, but everyone loved the move last draft in 2021, the move of drafting 20 pitchers in 20 slots and signing 19 of them. Because yes, everyone knows that Angels desperately need pitching. Everyone knows that. But the downside of going 20 for 20 in that area, if you will, is that you didn't get any position players at all. So now the position players you do have been not delayed a year. I don't want to say delayed a year, but now you start looking at the top prospects from the Angels organizations that are infield prospects, just position player prospects. They're either international signees who are very young, probably still 2-3 years away, or guys that Angels signed or drafted maybe 2 years ago out of high school because they were freak athletes in high school and are still, again, 2 years away from developing into something that can contribute to the major league team. Where if last year you draft, let's say, 15 pitchers and five position players, one of them maybe a catcher, one of them maybe being a third baseman, maybe one of them being another infielder. And if they're college type of players that who are already a little more polished and maybe a little bit more ready to get to the majors, maybe you start seeing some of those guys plug into third base right now when Anthony Rendon is out, but you don't have that. And so you have Matt Duffy. So it really sucks that Rendon's going to be missing time, it looks like, and there's not a hot prospect that can come up and fill the void and at least give the Angel fans something to look forward to when it comes to the young prospect, because there are a couple really good guys on the prospect list for the Angels as I pull it up. But most of them, again, Sam Bachman, we'll see what happens. He's kind of dealing with injury issues this year, pitching wise. But when you start looking at the position players that are in the top of the prospect list for the Angels, Errol Vera is a supposed to be a really good middle infield type, but he's still in low A Inland Empire right now. He looks great there, but between that and him only being 19 years old, he's still a while away from the majors. And he's your number two prospect. Same thing with Kyrene Paris. He's with the high A Tri-City Dust Devils, and he's only 20. So when you start looking at position players that can make an impact in our prospect farm system, they're still 2+ years away because they are like all 19, 20, maybe 21. But so it's going to be a while before this team actually starts benefiting from some of these draft picks that Perry and, quite honestly, the last GM Epler did before he left, because some of these young Paris, I believe, is from the previous regime. Adams is, Jackson is, Jeremiah Jackson is. Those guys are from the previous front office. So I do like some of the guys that are in the system. And when you see some of the preseason and, you know, midseason rankings, and don't be surprised when the Angels rankings are very low, because I personally, when I think of prospects that can help, and like where our team should be ranked in the prospect list, I think of guys that can contribute to the team fairly, you know, soon, if not this year, next year. And quite honestly, like I said, besides Sam Bachman, I don't know if any of the top five guys are going to be in the majors next year besides Sam. So that's going to be something to really look out for. It sucks that, like I said, with Rendon missing time, there's not like a hot prospect third baseman that is like the top, you know, seven prospect that's right on the edge and ready to come up that the Angels can put in there and that fans can get really excited for. So Angels drop the first game of the series against the Dodgers 2-0. Rendon's out for an extended period of time. It looks like the offense is out for a little bit of time, but you can hopefully look to the next day, and we'll talk about Wednesday's game. And again, the offense really, really struggling right after this. Today's episode of the All Angels podcast is brought to you by SportsDrink, your digital water cooler. SportsDrink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They're here to help us grow and hate your favorite team. A rising tide floats all boats, so go check them out online and on social. Go to sportsdrink.org or open Instagram and type in @SPRTSDRNK. Spelled like sports drink without the vowels. So we are back. So let's talk about the Wednesday night game again against the Dodgers. Offense has just been an unbelievably struggling over this last, you know, 2-3 weeks. You take away that one offensive explosion over the Mets, the offense has not produced much at all. And myself included, I really thought once they got the win against Boston, once they had that kind of offensive explosion against the Mets, that you would see more consistency out of especially some of the top guys. But that has definitely not been it at all so far in the last couple of weeks. So you go into Wednesday, again, looking for any kind of a spark, but kind of like I mentioned before, you had now Matt Duffy playing third for Anthony Rendon, who, again, is day-to-day right now, but I have a feeling he'll probably go on the IL just because you can't afford, especially going into a long series against Seattle where there is a doubleheader on Saturday, you can't afford to have one of your position players not being available and taking up a roster spot. So I kind of think that Rendon will be put on the IL by Friday. But again, I don't know that yet. And maybe by the time you're listening to this, they would have made an announcement. But the Dodgers, again, everyone wanted to talk about how the Angels were missing, you know, Kershaw and Urias and Buehler. But Tyler Anderson, again, was just as good as Gosselin was the day before. And he really, really showed it during this game. And for the Angels, you had Reed Detmers on the mound making the return to Dodger Stadium, where I believe he made his MLB debut for the Angels last season. And it got off to a really rough start in the first inning for Reed Detmers because, you know, the biggest thing I've noticed with the Angels pitchers, and you can talk about this with Ohtani, you can talk about this with Sandoval, you can talk about this with Syndergaard, you can just, you know, I feel like every pitcher in the Angels rotation right now kind of has this issue, and that is just get through the first inning, get comfortable, and find your groove, find the feel. I don't know if it's something they're doing down the bullpen where they're not really working, I don't say working hard, but I don't know how to say it, where maybe they need to change up their bullpen, pregame bullpen routine, because it always seems like the first inning is always the one where you kind of hold your breath and you hope they are able to get out of it. And that's exactly what didn't happen for Reed today. Big, big first inning. Started off by giving up two walks, one to Freddie Freeman, one to Trey Turner, and then ends up just hanging what looked like an off-speed pitch up high to Will Smith, and he takes advantage of that and puts it over the wall for a three-run home run. So the Angels, who already offensively have been struggling, are now down 3-0 in the bottom of the first. He would end up giving up two more singles before he's able to get the final out of the game by Chris Taylor hits a fly ball to deep center field, but luckily Mike Trout's out there and makes one of his better catches of his career, going over the wall and robbing another three-run home run. So it could have been a lot worse, but you're looking at it, Dodgers only scoring three runs. You have to kind of take that as a W because of all the traffic that he had on the bases. And again, it's a lot of pitches in one inning, you know. It's great when you can get through an inning with 15 pitches or, you know, 17 pitches, but when you're getting up in there and in the mid to high 30s in one single inning, unless those next couple innings are really quick and low stress, you have to think that those pitches kind of mean more and are a little more taxing on the pitcher's arm just because they're in such a short burst. But he would end up, Detmers would end up having a better game than I think a lot of people anticipated, but he would end up giving up another home run to Trey Turner in the bottom of the third, where he would be eventually lifted in the fourth inning. So he got into the fourth inning. He would end up being lifted with 3 2/3, giving up 4 hits, 4 earned runs, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks. So the strikeouts were there. The walks are also there, unfortunately, and it just seems like during this stretch of offenses struggling, the Angels offense struggling, and some of the teams they're playing really do take advantage of mistakes by pitchers. And you will see, you know, whether it's the Dodgers or the Mets or the Yankees, you will see pitchers make mistakes. And the Angels batters, whoever it is, Trout, Walsh, you know, Stassi, whoever, just not take advantage of it. You can tell when they hang a breaking ball and they foul it off, or they hit off the end of the bat and they just miss it or just get underneath it. And on the flip side, when Reed makes maybe like 2 or 3 mistakes, they're taking 2 of those 3 and putting them over the wall and putting the Angels in a really, really tough situation. But like I mentioned, Reed would go 3 2/3 inning on 83 pitches. So this is, again, kind of going back to what I was saying about Noah Syndergaard. Yes, it's only 83 pitches, and people are probably going to come out and say you have to let him stay in and get and go longer. But 83 pitches, and you're not even through 4 innings. It's not like it's 83 pitches and he's in the 6th inning or 7th inning, because then, yeah, then it's a little more spread out. It's not as high taxing on the arm. It's not as high pressured. But yeah, with 83 pitches in that short of a time frame, I think the longevity of trying to keep him healthy this year has to be the number one goal. And I don't mind Nevin taking him out right then and there, because like I mentioned, it'd be different if it was a seventh inning and he was only at 83 pitches and you're worried about the third time through the lineup coming and all that stuff. Then I would say, well, let him work through that. But with the pitches in such a small, you know, inning count, I think that was the absolute right call. And then you got Jimmy Hergett, who came in for two and a third innings, and he was really, really good, only giving up one hit and striking out two. But when you look at this game overall, the big overarching story from this game is really going to be Tyler Anderson and his performance on the mound, or the lack of offensive production by the Angels, because the Angels were getting no hit all the way till the ninth inning, until Shohei Ohtani comes up with and gets a triple, followed by a Matt Duffy. I believe it was a double, and they're able to get on the board and make it 4-1. But after that, or, you know, shortly after that, they ended up getting the third out and the game was over. And yes, the Angels got a hit, but it came way too late and could not get more than just one on the board. And for a guy that tradition isn't necessarily a, you know, big name pitching wise, he really did really good against the Angels, and he's been doing good all year long. But Angels bats have been the story, I think, for the last week or so, just because there haven't really been there. Again, you take away that big game from Saturday against the Mets, where Walsh had a cycle and you had Trout's two home runs, but you take that away, there hasn't been really any kind of offensive production. Ward, again, his second game back since coming off the IL, goes for 0 for 4. Trout 0 for 3. Ohtani 1 for 4. Again, Duffy 1 for 4. And then you have O's all the way down through the rest of this lineup. So that is really, really frustrating. And granted, yes, they ran into two really good pitchers. But even being against really good pitchers, you would think that you would be able to get, you know, at least 4 or 5 hits, even if they're scattered throughout the game, get something going. And it just seems like, I don't know, I don't want to say that they're struggling, but, well, they are struggling, but they're pressing. Like, you know, they might be pressing, they might be trying to do too much. And for the team that was absolutely killing it at the beginning of the year, offensively with home run and slugging and all that stuff, I don't know what the key is. I don't know if it's as simple as, I know a lot of people out there want to say it's the coaching and the pitching coach and the hitting coach, and they need to go too. And this is, you know, this was, I thought firing Madden was going to fix it and all that stuff, but it's not that simple. You know, the coaches can go out there, and again, I don't know the plan. I don't know what their ideas are, or what they're telling their guys, what they want their plan to be. I don't necessarily know if they're going up to, you know, Velasquez and saying, hey, let's work the count a little bit. And then he goes up there and swings at the first thing. And then it looks bad on the hitting coach because the player isn't, you know, going to plan, isn't following the plan, isn't, you know, doing what his coaches say. And then the next thing people will say, well, then why don't you bench him? Because now we're seeing the Angels aren't deep at all. You bench any of these starters, you're probably going to have a huge drop off behind them. So there's a lot of things that are going on in this team that, yeah, I'm sure maybe firing Joe Maddon would have helped it. Maybe now we're figuring out that it's not going to help it. But at the same time, I don't think Joe being the way Joe was going to help it either. I think it was one of those things where it was going to happen regardless of who's at the helm. And what do you have if you're not, again, and I say this when Joe got fired, and people want to say, well, why did you fire Joe if this is still not working? If your plans were to get rid of Joe at the end of the year because you just didn't see eye to eye with what he believed in or what he thought about analytics or whatever, why wait? Why wait until the end of the year? You know, the worst thing I think that could have happened for maybe the front office is if you don't see, if you don't agree with what Joe's doing and Joe doesn't agree with what you're doing and there's just a big disconnect there, and then all of a sudden the Angels are in the playoffs and now you have to keep them. Now there's, you know, now's another year of not working and maybe hurting the team as a overall hurting the team as a big picture. But, you know, we'll see how this managerial situation works out. Nevin is an interim coach for manager for a reason. People are already saying fire Nevin, fire Nevin. Guess what? He's already kind of halfway out the door when you're interim manager anyways, just because, you know, you're not a full manager. It's weird how that interim title can change so many different ways you look at it. But this managerial change, this coaching change, they changed who coaches, you know, first and third and who does this and that. Like, so they are trying to shake it up. I don't know if it works or if it's just rearranging the seats on the Titanic. I'm not sure, but at least you can sit here and say that the Angels front office is trying. Maybe they're trying and it's not working. I don't know. But they are mixing it up. They are changing it up. At a certain point, guys need to perform. Stassi needs to perform. You know, Velasquez needs to perform too. But I'm thinking of the guys that just got recently paid. Stassi, Iglesias, Rendon. Like, those guys really need to show up and perform. You know, I would say Fletcher, but he, you know, is injured. Some of those guys really need to start stepping up, and it can't be all Trout and Ohtani. It can't all be Trout, Ohtani, and one other guy. You look at the roster up and down, you know, Ward, yes, was an absolute wonderful, wonderful surprise at the beginning of the year, and the offensive numbers he put up were great, MVP level in any category. But he doesn't have a history of repeating it. He doesn't have a history of doing it year in and year out. So was that just a really hot, big hot streak, or is that who he is? And if that was just a great hot streak for the time being, and that's not necessarily who he is full time, then this offense takes a big step backwards. You know, Trout has to be an MVP type. Ohtani has to be an MVP type. You look at Brandon Marsh, going to be a great player, but he's not there yet. He's still very young, very raw. And yes, he shows a glimpse both defensively and offensively, but I think it's very easy to see right now his defensive skills are far ahead of his offensive skills. But not to say that the offensive skills can't come eventually, but it's going to take time, and he's not going to be that big outfield offensive slugger that, you know, you look at a position like that. But maybe in time, you know, you look around the infield with Rendon down, there's really no real big option, real great option for that third base right now. It's Matt Duffy, but what does he bring? Yeah, he might be able to get on base a little more than others, but he has no power. He can't steal a base. He's not very fast. He doesn't have a great arm. So again, it's another step back. Velasquez, you know what he does defensively. He can make all the defensive plays. He can make all the defensive throws, but what is he going to bring you offensively? He's not very consistent there at all. And again, you can kind of go around the whole infield and you can pick apart every single person in this lineup and say they're not good at this or that. And that's what this team was at the beginning of the year. Nothing's really changed except the results. So yeah, I understand why it's frustrating. And I'm frustrated too, because you do invest your time. You do invest your money and all that stuff. But at the same time, it's sports. Not everything is going to go great. Not every team is entitled to a winning season. And yes, for the Angels, it seems like it's longer than most, and I get it. But at the same time, I look around and realize, you know what? I'm here to watch a game. I'm here to be entertained. And yes, losing is not entertainment, but if I can lose myself for a 3-hour block during the night and have a game be at least close, then I'm down for it. But it's very frustrating to see this team struggle the way they are, just because you saw what it was early in the year. But hopefully things turn around. Hopefully guys start getting on a little bit of more of a hot streak. Hopefully this offense is able to produce more than just one run every two games like they did with the Dodgers. And we'll see. I think there are some very big questions as far as this roster and how this roster is constructed. But at the same time, when you go in and try to not buy a roster, but there's not a lot of guys on this team that have been developed. You know, you're looking at especially the infield outside of Walsh, everyone that's in that infield, I guess Renjifo, but Renjifo is kind of like a 4-4-AM player right now. He's kind of up and down, but you know, you third baseman, that's an investment. That's not a develop. Same thing with shortstop. You know, a couple of your second basemans are guys that you picked off a waiver wire. You didn't necessarily develop that guy. Same thing with the catching position. Ward is a very late bloomer, and still, even with him being a late bloomer, you're still not 100% sure what he is. So The depth that the Angel desperately, desperately need is coming in the minor league system. But the unfortunate part is that it's not coming for a while. So when you try to buy a team or try to invest in guys that have been on other teams that might have been released or just are straight up free agents, you have to have those hit. And if they don't hit, it's hard to have depth behind them. And I think that's the biggest issue with the Angels right now is just lack of total depth. So we have a... we have a voicemail that came through during the Dodger game, and the Dodger game, Marsh was not playing. It was Lagares out in left because of the Tyler Anderson being a lefty. And this voicemail came from Dan from Lake Forest, and it's about Lagares.
Hey guys, Dan from Lake Forest, first time caller, long time, you know. What is Lagares? Why is Lagares? We've got Adele, and he's languishing, I guess, but I don't get Lagares at all. If you got any take, I'd love to hear it.
So thank you, Dan. And yes, Lagares is still up. Adele is sent back down again for, I think, the second time down to AAA Salt Lake. And the reason why that is fairly simple. Joe Adele is the type that is only going to benefit and only develop by getting everyday at-bats and everyday reps in the outfield. And in AAA Salt Lake, he can get that. He is definitely probably the best outfielder they have on that team when he's down there in AAA Salt Lake. So he's going to get everyday at-bats. He's going to get everyday reps in the outfield that he really, really needs. As far as if he's with the Angels right now, and let's say you switch the guys and you put Lagares down in AAA and you bring Adele back up, Adele's not going to play very often. Adele's going to be sitting on the bench probably 4 to 5 games a week and not getting those reps that he really, really needs. And if you're looking for him to develop into a better player than he is now, you're not going to do that by just sitting on the bench and waiting for your turn to get in the lineup because someone needs a day off for rest. Lagares is that guy where you can throw him out there every 4 games and you're not necessarily, because he is longer in his career, you're not worried about, you know, stunting his development. His development is done. He's not going to get any better. And so if he sits, it doesn't really matter. The one thing I don't understand right now, and the one thing that doesn't make a lot of sense to me at all, and hopefully someone in the front office can see this, I know Brandon struggles against lefties. I get that. But at the same time, Lagares has been struggling against lefties as well, and he's supposed to be the guy that can come in with that platoon and take advantage of that, and he hasn't been. So at a certain point, I don't understand why they are platooning Marsh and Lagares. They need to stick with Marsh, let him work through his struggles against lefties, and then Lagares literally being a guy that is just in for guys that need days off because they played, you know, 10 days in a row or something like that. But if you're going to try to platoon Lagares and Marsh, I believe is the total wrong answer. I think Marsh has just as much pop in his bat lefty than Lagares has going against a lefty, and that's saying something. Again, Lagares was brought in to take advantage of that platoon and go against lefties and really take advantage of that, and he hasn't at all. He's been really struggling against lefties even more so. I understand why Lagares is on the 26 man roster. It makes sense for Joe's development wise, but I don't understand why he's getting so much at bats and so many reps over Marsh against lefties. Let Marsh in there and let Marsh work through his difficulties against lefties, work through his struggles against lefties, because he's going to get out more of it than Lagares will. Lagares, again, I highly, highly doubt Lagares is back on this team next year. If anything, you know, I would be shocked, but Marsh is for sure. So let him work through any kind of difficulties he have against getting lefties. Let him get that experience, and it's only going to benefit him in the long run. And again, Lagares is there or should be there for guys that have been playing, you know, 8 games in a row, 9 games in a row that need a day off. That should be the only reason Lagares gets it, not because of a platoon reason. And that is something I do not understand at all. Now let's look ahead to the schedule coming up. Obviously, the Angels are probably on their way up to Seattle as I record this because they have a 5-game series over a 4-day span against the Seattle Mariners up in Seattle. And Ohtani will take the mound Thursday night. against Seattle's Greg Kirby. And Shohei, again, coming off that great win against Boston that broke the losing streak. And hopefully he has the same kind of magic on Thursday night. Shohei's coming in with a 4-4 record, 3.64 ERA with 71 strikeouts. Greg Kirby for the Mariners is coming in with a 1-1 record of 3.65 ERA with 35 strikeouts. So, again, Seattle is a team, I believe, is much like the Angels, struggling, trying to find their footing. A team like the Angels had a lot of people talking about them taking the next step this season, but have struggled this season. I think this is the time the Angels really need to take advantage of another struggling team. You can say whatever you want about the last 3 weeks that the Angels struggled, or the last 2.5 weeks about the Angels struggles, but they've played really, really good teams in that span. But now coming up after the Seattle series, you have, or even including the Seattle series, you're going to have quite a bit of games against teams that are either hovering around 500 or below 500. So you really have to take advantage of this. So this is the Thursday matchup. Now you go to the Friday matchup against the Mariners. You have Michael Lorenzen against Robbie Ray. And remember, Robbie Ray was the huge offseason acquisition for the Seattle Mariners, and he has struggled a bit this year. He is 5-6 with a 4.52 ERA with 81 strikeouts. Michael Lorenzen, 6-3 with a 3.45 ERA with 44 strikeouts. So obviously Robbie Ray has the stuff to shut an offense down. He hasn't shown it as much this year, but it's still there. So Angel fans and Angels have to look out for that. Michael Lorenzen, again, having a very good season by his standards, by any standards, really, especially making that jump from the bullpen to the starting rotation. And that is going to be Friday night. All the games, Thursday, Friday, and I believe the late game on Saturday will be a 7:10 start. Again, Saturday's two games. Angels have come out and said it looks like Patrick Sandoval will be the starter on the Saturday morning game. They have yet to announce a starter for the Saturday night game. Seattle has not announced a starter for either one of the games. And then Sunday, same story. No starters have been officially announced. But like I mentioned before, by the time you listen to this podcast, there might be more news out as far as who your starting pitchers are. But Angels really need to take advantage of this trip up north. Again, they're playing Seattle 5 games in 4 days. They really do need, I don't want to say it's a must win because I feel like that's a dumb thing to say right now this early. And yes, it's still pretty early in the season, but it is a must win series for this Angels. If for any reason other than just the standings, for the confidence of it, for the confidence of this team, for the confidence of the players, just to be able to say they won a series, or the first series they won since, you know, whenever. This is going to be a very, very crucial series for the Angels. And quite honestly, it's probably going to be a very crucial series for Seattle. So they're going to have a lot to play for as well. So we'll see how this happens. We'll see how this all plays out. Right now, as we record standings, Angels are right now 29-35, 10.5 games out of first place, and they are right now 5.5 out of the last wild card spot. And right behind them is Seattle, only a half game back of the Angels. So, again, Seattle's kind of the same team as the Angels right now, a team that had a lot of hopes coming into the season that has just not worked out the way they had hoped. But again, we'll see how this plays out. The Angels need to take advantage of this, and they need to take advantage of playing Kansas City, and they need to take advantage of Chicago, and then they have another series with Seattle before the end of the month. And they really need to get on some kind of a hot streak. They need to get, you know, 11 games, win 11 games or so before the end of the month to really, I think, ignite this team and ignite this fan base, let's be honest. So wait and see, wait and see, wait and see. So the last thing I want to kind of bring up is more of a question that I'm interested in hearing what people's responses are. And I think the biggest thing that has been hurting this team, you can talk about on the field as far as defensively or pitching or even in the batter's box offensively. And it's been the consistency issue of this team. There's been so many times where this team has shown glimpses of how good they could be and how much of a powerhouse they could be in the division and in the league, but it just seems like when that does happen, the next couple games, they take a huge step back and they look nothing like that. And it's just the consistency aspect. But I don't know where that comes from, the consistency. Is consistency a skill that you can coach, teach? Is consistency something that you can breed in the minor leagues and bring up with you in the majors? Or is consistency something like a skill like speed? You know, you either have it or you don't. Yeah, there's certain things you can do to maybe make it a little bit better. But at the end of the day, you were born fast or you weren't. And is that the same thing with consistency? Yeah, maybe there's little tweaks and little things here and there to be more consistent. But at the end of the day, is that something that you either have or you don't? And you can't look for a guy who is widely inconsistent to all of a sudden turn around and be super consistent, even with the best coaches out there. And, you know, one of the things about Trout that is still astonishing to me, and I'm sure to a lot of players, is that you look at his yearly totals year in and year out, and you want to talk about consistent. That is the definition of consistent. And yes, this year is not going the way I'm sure Trout would want, but he is one of the most consistent guys out there. And you always have, and it's funny when Trout, you know, is up for MVP and stuff like that, you always have, seems like every year he's up for MVP, there's another guy nipping at his heels. You know, one year it's Marcus Semien. The next year it's Mookie Betts. Next year, you know, when Mookie was in Boston or something like that. So, but the constant out of all of that has always been Trout because he's so damn consistent. But where does that come from? Is that something that he was coached to be? Is that something that he just is? Is it something that you can learn from, you know, from a buddy? And I think that's the biggest thing where I don't know how to feel about this team, because I don't know if they've got consistent guys. And I don't know necessarily how much the coaching can really help that. Yeah, again, I'm sure there's little things you can do here and there to make it a little bit better. But like speed or power, it's kind of one of those things, either you have it or you don't. And how do you make a guy with zero power all of a sudden hit 30 home runs? It's like, you can. How do you make a guy that is wildly inconsistent consistent? I don't think you can. And that's a frustrating part too, because I think there's a lot of questions like that out there where as fans, we like to think we're in the mix. We like to think that we know what's going on and how the game plan is set and what every guy should be doing at every single moment. But the truth of the matter is we don't. The truth of the matter is we have no idea if that guy was supposed to lay down a bunt and didn't, or if that guy was supposed to hit and run and didn't. And we're not supposed to, you know, there's been so many times too, pitching wise, where the catcher sets up low and away, and because of the pitch and, you know, the consistency, him not being able to hit his spots consistently, and now it's up and in and over the wall. That tends to happen a lot. But who's that on? Is that on the coach or is that on the player? And I think before, a lot of fans like to rip the coach because it's the easiest thing in the world. You know, there's something about, you know, the guys being out there. The guys are going to take you further than the coaches will. And now, where is this team with that? How is this team built? Is this team built to compete? Or is this team built to get on the hot streak at the right time and hopefully find their way into the playoffs and maybe get on another hot streak? Because I don't think this team is built to, with their depth issue, this team needs a lot to go right for them to make the playoffs. And I said that at the beginning of the year. With a lack of depth in this organization, the lack of depth in the starting 26, they need a lot of things to go right, and the big thing being health. And from the Fletcher injury very early in the year till Rendon to Trout to Ward, it just seems like it has not been, you know, going very well. So hopefully they could get the health part back going again. And again, we'll wait to see what happens with Rendon. But once this team is healthy, if it is all completely healthy, I'm just not sure what this team is and how consistent they can play, because I don't know if that is something that can be teached. I don't know if that's something that can be taught. I don't know if that's something that could happen, you know, overnight or what, because obviously the biggest thing with this team right now is the consistency aspect, and it's just not there yet. And I'm sure every Angel fan hopes and wishes that it's going to be there soon, and we'll have to wait and see. And hopefully the Angels take advantage of this stretch of games the rest of the month against teams, like I mentioned. They are playing against the Seattle Mariners for the next weekend, and the Kansas City Royals after that, and then Seattle home again, and then the Chicago White Sox, who are on their own kind of a slide right now for the end of the month. And they really need to take advantage of this. They really, really need to take advantage of playing against teams that are at or below their level. And hopefully they are able to take advantage of it and get closer and closer to that 500 mark. And need to stop worrying about the division and need to start just worrying about getting to 500. Once you get to 500, get to a wild card. Once you get to a wild card, then you can maybe start talking about the division. But right now, I hear fans saying, you know, well, the Astros lost and they're not able to take advantage of it. I think that's the complete wrong mindset when it comes to all that. So we'll see how it plays out. Again, I'm very hopeful that they're going to take advantage of this stretch of game. So again, we'll be here either way. And if you guys ever have a question and you want to put it out there on our voicemail, whether it's a, like I said, whether it's a question, whether it's a hot take, whether it's a maybe an idea that's opposite of mine and you want to talk about that, you can always reach us by calling us 951-384-0810. And I'll put it in the description of this podcast. But let's open, you know, again, call anytime, leave the voicemail. Next time we have a podcast, I will put it on the podcast and answer your question or just give you my thought about your statement or your, you know, hot take. So again, that's 951-384-0810. So we're going to wrap up this podcast right now. We will be back on Sunday after the Seattle Mariners game, hopefully with better news. But before that, I want to say happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Sunday is Father's Day. I, for one, will be on the golf course with my dad before the Angel game and then get back and watch a little bit of the Angel game, a little bit of the U.S. Open, flip back and forth. But whatever you do, make sure you send a text or a phone call with your dad if you are not going to see them. Father's Day is always one of the best holidays that I like to spend with my family, with my dad, golfing and all that stuff. So I can't wait, but we'll be back again Sunday night to record Sunday night, so you can leave a voicemail anytime between now and then, and it will be played on that podcast that's coming out Monday morning, but recording Sunday night. So again, always reach out to us on our social media feeds, Halo_Haven on Twitter and on Instagram, or our voicemail line, 951-384-0810. So I'm your host, Daniel Garcia, and this has been another edition of the All Angels Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? you need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.